Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. Did you know that Motormouth is on Patreon? Yes, you can support your favourite podcast if you want. And in return, we've got some great goodies and bonus content to give you. Just search Motormouth Official on Patreon, where there are three levels of membership. Become a Motormouth companion for just £5 per month with our eternal thanks, early access to all podcast episodes, ad-free. If you fancy going for £7.50 per month and becoming a Motormouth Associate, that means you can ask your own questions to our guests as well as enjoy ad-free early access to every single podcast. And if you're an absolute Motormouth legend and want to do £10 per month, you will get an official Motormouth baseball cap, a personal thank you on the actual show from us, and everything else, including ad-free early access and the opportunity to ask a question. Just search Motormouth Official on Patreon or follow the links in the detail of this podcast. Your support means everything to us and keeps us going, so thank you.
Before we kick off with today's guest, we must tell you about our Season 5 sponsors and the great team over at Motus One. Sponsors are vital for our survival and ensure we can continue to bring you interviews with the biggest names in racing. So if you or your company require event transportation, Dana and his team at Motus One has you covered anywhere in the world. From a single chauffeur-driven sedan to a fleet of luxury SUVs, Teslas or motor coaches, find your transportation solution with Motus One. With offices worldwide, including the Middle East, Europe and Africa, they can support your transportation needs regardless of your location. Motus One is committed to world-class service at the best possible rates to ensure your event goes without a hitch. Contact them at motusone.com. We'll put all their social links in the podcast description. And a massive thanks to Dana, their CEO and founder, for having faith in our show and joining us for Season 5. Now, on with today's episode.
This week on the Motormouth podcast, the finale for Season 5. We thought we'd push the boat out and invite not just one, but two guests on the show. A double whammy, and it was an absolute treat to be joined by two very important members of the Neo 333 Formula E team in the form of team principal Christian Silk and his newly employed driver for this year's campaign, Tom Blomqvist, lifting the lid on their careers, the future prospects of the team, and some questionable quiz tactics. Thank you so much to you guys who continue to download and listen. If you like it, please do leave us a review. It really helps us to get bigger and enjoy.
Hello everyone, Tim Sylvie here. Now before we introduce today's guests, I need to head from leafy Bedfordshire to an equally leafy part of Essex to bring in the motorsport aficionado that is, of course, Harry Benjamin. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, Tim. Thank you very much. Well, this is our first show back after sort of the Christmas, New Year break, isn't it? And although it's generally been filled with a bit of dread, and we now are in lockdown in the UK, I'm feeling kind of positive.
Yeah.
We're trying to.
Yeah, I'm feeling positive too. I mean, 2021 feels like it's going to be a big year for us. I'm excited. You know, in spite of the dramas going on around the world with coronavirus, we've got loads of exciting plans, yeah, which will all be released soon, with different race teams and events, and loads of stuff I'm dying to talk about but can't yet. So all will become clear, people, and there's an opportunity for our listeners, the UK-based ones anyway, to get involved in one of our events coming up soon near Silverstone. We'll leave it at that for now, and details will be released in due course.
But, such a tease.
I know, terrible tease. Now, anyway, shall I introduce today's guests?
Oh, I think so. Yes, plural.
So it's a double whammy. Something we've done once before with the guys at Veloce Racing, but this is a first for us. So not one guest, but two. The first, Tom Blomqvist, a rapidly rising star of the track, born in the UK before moving to New Zealand. He's the son of legendary rally star Stig. His decorated career has taken him all over the world, competing in the likes of FIA Formula 3, Harry's favourite series over at DTM, endurance racing sports cars, the incredible Bathurst 12-hour race. And this year, after cutting his teeth with Andretti and Jaguar Racing, he's now a full-blown Formula E racer for Neo 333 Racing. And his boss is conveniently our second interviewee, Mr. Christian Silk. Christian joined Neo at the start of Season 3 to lead the race and test engineering department, following many years in Formula 1, where he enjoyed roles with the likes of Renault, my old favourites, Marussia, and Williams. He's now the all-important team principal, the big boss at the Chinese Formula E outfit. It's our pleasure to have them both here. Tom, Christian, welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
That's nice. Thanks for the big up.
Hope all the we got everything in there. I'm sure if we missed anything, we will end up covering it at some point. First of all, Tom, let's kick off with you, shall we, first, and just do a bit of a general question that we always ask, which is, you know, this, well, 2020 at least, and as we go into 2021, it's, I don't think any of us have really experienced anything quite like it, really. How's it been from your point of view? How have you got yourself through it all with, you know, racing and work and then your personal life as well?
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it pretty clearly there. I mean, these times are like unprecedented, I guess, especially in my lifetime. I'm sure most of yours as well. I mean, I would say, you know, when this whole thing kicked off, I was up in Europe, you know, the season was start to get underway. I'd just joined a new, new program for the year, actually. I'd moved across from BMW to join our motorsport in an Aston program, starting in sports cars, and then hopefully that would evolve into something else. And then Corona hit, and that put a roadblock there straight away. You know, fortunately for me, I've got family in New Zealand. You know, you guys touched on it as well. I grew up there. My mum still lives there. And we made a split decision back in March to basically shoot off there. And I think it was probably the best decision that I made because, you know, we got back to New Zealand in the end of March. We were in like a super strict lockdown for about 4 or 5 weeks. And then basically from that moment on, it was back to normal again in New Zealand. And I mean, I stayed down there for until the end of July. So I got a good 3-4 months, back home, which I haven't actually had to spend that time in New Zealand since I left in 2009. So to start my career, well, to progress my career in Formula racing. I mean, so it was strange. But in a way it was somewhat nice, because in these last, 10 years that I've, or 11 years now that I've been, let's say, competing, racing up in Europe, it's like the only time that I've felt like I've actually, like there's been a break, you know?
Yeah,
obviously, no one wished that upon anyone. But at the same time, you know, we're in a sport that is, it's a high-pressure environment. You're kind of full go all the time. So knowing that, like, everyone was kind of in a similar situation, It was a nice little refreshment to a degree.
And New Zealand have dealt with it particularly well. I've got a brother and sister out there, one in Christchurch, one in Auckland. And I know it's a nice, relatively isolated place, so it might be slightly differently affected to other countries. But they seem to have dealt with it incredibly well. And their quality of life at the moment is fantastic. They're on holiday in New Zealand with their family, just travelling around a bit, having a great time.
I know. It's incredible. Because, I mean, at the beginning, everyone thought, it's overkill. We're getting like 3 cases, we're in a massive lockdown. Everyone was like, there was 2 sides. There was the one side that's saying, yeah, we're doing a great job, and the other side that was kind of like, it's, massively blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of an overkill. Looking at the situation now, I think they nailed it because
yeah.
For the last 6 months they've been living like, and the only one of the only countries probably in the world that's just living like nothing ever existed, and this was all a distant memory. So it's I get mad FOMO when I check on, you know, on the social channels and whatnot, yeah. And everyone's having a great time and we're up here just basically living like monks, you know. It's challenging.
I bet. Moving over to Christian, are you in the UK?
Yeah, I'm based in Oxford.
Oh, so you're with the rest of us locked down.
Yeah, yes, I'm locked up. I have to say, I mean, I echo Tom's comments a bit, really. It's because we travel so much with our industry and we're always bombing around the world. And I started traveling in 88. I've quite enjoyed the time at home. You know, I've got three children. It's been really nice to spend the time with my children. It's really been really nice to spend the time with my wife. Yeah. Although we're driving each other slightly nuts now, but it's been good to spend time with the family. And I'm lucky. Oxfordshire's lovely. You know, I've just been for a walk in the woods. The woods are gorgeous. And I've spent a lot of time watching the wildlife while I've been doing Zoom meetings. So it's strange because on one side, that's been good. It's been nice. It's been quality time. And then the other side, I think everyone has got a hard story to tell at the moment as well. We've all been touched by it. So I'd be very surprised if not everyone on the planet has been touched by something bad now. So it's a really strange situation. You almost feel guilty by thinking, well, it hasn't been too bad for me. It's an odd time. And I mean, Tom said he hasn't experienced anything like this in his lifetime. I know I'm a lot older than you, Tom, but I haven't either, mate.
Yeah, I noticed that dig, okay. I guess you didn't go through the war, so.
But I think anyone, you know, to talk to your mother-in-law, your parents, no one's been through anything like this. It's uncharted territory.
Yeah.
We took the decision not to travel, and it was a good decision for us. You know, we're lucky. We're in a good position to be in. You know, I know my niece is at home in a single-bedroom flat in London looking after young children. That's tough.
It's really tough. Yeah.
They say we're all in the same boat. I think we're all in the same storm, but we're in very different sized boats at the moment.
Yes, I think that's the
good way of putting it, I think. I mean, we've got a tiny garden, but it's grass and the kids can go out and run about. You know, I really feel for the people that I work with who are, like you say, in a one-bedroom apartment somewhere with no outdoor space whatsoever. You know, mental health-wise, it's really not great. Well, let's lift the mood slightly and put COVID in the bin for a little while.
Hooray.
Yay. Tom, I guess you were always destined for motorsport. Your father, as we know, very big name in rallying. Was it always on the cards that you were going to be a racing driver? And how come you're not a rally driver?
I think, it was inevitable, I would say, from a very early age. More so because, you know, I grew up in the UK until I was 7. And we had like a bit of land in the countryside close to Stansted Airport. And I just remember for whatever reason, like sometimes Dad would have like rally cars at our place, like because we had this massive barn, you know, and we had like there was all sorts of stuff in there from time to time. And, you know, we had tractors and I think it was I was three years old. He bought my first like quad bike, you know, one of those typical classic 50cc, the white and blue ones, and they had the yellow and blue ones. Yeah. I think everyone had those as a kid. But yeah, I mean, 3 years old, I had my first quad bike. You know, I remember sitting on his lap, driving the tractor in the fields, driving the driveway, sitting on the lap, driving up to the house in the driveway. And I think it was just kind of a knock-on effect of the fact that, you know, that's kind of all my father knew as well. He grew up in, not grew up in motorsport, but, you know, he was as heavily involved in motorsport, obviously. And I think it was kind of all he knew. So I remember, you know, when he would go away for a bit, he'd come home with like, toy cars, you know, wouldn't come home with something else, you know. It was always like, that was just what he knew. And I think it just kind of evolved, you know, after a while, when you're just in that environment, you see it and you just want to do it. And I mean, since I was old enough to walk and talk and, you know, anything, I mean, it was just everything I had was cars. So I think it was inevitable. Funnily enough, though, my first, you know, what I enjoyed most was actually like playing in the mud and going sideways. And it was actually, I nearly started racing like quad bikes, like ATV, which was when I first moved out to New Zealand. Because when I was in the countryside, you know, I used to play around in the mud on my quad bike, remote control cars, always had rally cars. moved to New Zealand and basically nearly started racing quad bikes. It wasn't until like, because my father, my mum and dad split up, which is why I moved to New Zealand with my mum. Dad used to come over, and it wasn't literally until one afternoon after school. Dad and I got a younger brother. We went down to a local go-kart track. It was just like a random school day. And there was, I think, two families there testing. And, I mean, the fathers recognized my dad and just, you know, they started getting chats, started to chat, basically. And next thing you know, this family had offered me and my little brother a go in their go-kart. And man, we had a go in their go-kart. I think like 2 days later, we bought our own one. And it basically started from there. And I would say more than anything, it was just a case of, because I started in go-karts, started racing. You know, my dad had done rallying. So I wasn't like, I don't know, just kind of swayed. Like
Was there an overall big ambition? Because naturally, obviously back then, Formula E wasn't around. That wasn't an option. But obviously no. Formula One was there. Was that always, you know, were you a fan of it? Were you watching it? And was that where you wanted to go? Or were you just, as you sort of allude to, just kind of seeing what happened?
I think, you know, most people say that, like they say, you know, a lot of people would say, no, you know, it was just supposed to be fun. And then, you know, like I never saw this becoming a profession. I think in my case, it was different because I'd seen, you know, my father had done it, right? And like that was his profession, that was his career. And from a very early age, for me, that's what I wanted to do. It wasn't a case of, you know, go-kart, we just started go-karting. I mean, yes, it was fun, but I always had the ambition to turn it into, you know, a living, a lifestyle. And I had, honestly, I had that ambition from a very early age. And I mean, unfortunately, you know, I was the older one. My brother was younger. We both started karting. But he's, you know, he's working at home in New Zealand. You know, I was the one lucky enough, let's say, or fortunate enough to get that, you know, kind of shot over in Europe early and made it kind of count.
Before we move on to Formula E, I this is for Harry's benefit, really, because there's two things that Harry is obsessed with. One is Paul de Resta, and it's become an unhealthy obsession, and really he needs to see somebody about it. And the second is DTM. So it's obviously a favourite here of Harry's and a favourite of ours. How did that opportunity come about, and what was it like racing in that series?
Can I just stress, it's not a weird obsession. I'm just an admirer.
Yeah, it is.
I just think he should have had a better shot in F1 than he did. But then again, he did actually get a shot in F1. But yeah, as Tim has said, I'm a bit of a DTM fan. I've noticed in the last couple of years, I think everyone has, that it's been struggling. And now, obviously, for next season, you know, there is a bit of a rebrand, new cars, new teams. They've obviously lost Mercedes a couple of years ago and Audi, oh, no, BMW as well. So when you were there, you know, how's it? How did you see the series and how do you look back at your time in the DTM and where do you see it going forwards?
Well, firstly, you know, my last season in single seaters was 2014. I was, you know, together, I was at Carlin. And it was a really tough year. I think, you know, Esteban Ocon, he won the championship. I was second and then Verstappen was third. I mean, there was the likes of, you know, Felix Rosenqvist, Lucas Auer, Antonio Giovinazzi. I mean, this field was stacked.
Some, yeah, top names, yeah.
Yeah, it was properly stacked that year. And basically on the back end of that, I was approached by BMW if I wanted to do like a shootout for a kind of like a DTM seat for 2015. And I did that shootout, which was also stacked. I think, you know, I remember Sam Bird was there, Robin Frentz, Richie Stanaway, Jack Harvick. There was loads of us, Alex Lynn.
Just getting in all the names there of all the people you beat. Yeah.
And yeah, exactly. Actually, mate, because now they beat me. So, once upon a time,
we're going to change that. Yeah. We're going to change that, Tom.
Yes.
Yeah, and then basically I went into DTM on the back of that kind of shootout. Honestly, it was super hard. I underestimated it at first, basically because like, I did the testing, was always, you know, relatively competitive in testing. Come to the first race, even my first qualifying was really quite good. The races were less good because it was the first time that I'd like been in a tin top. You know, in Formula cars, you qualify, you do the start, and basically after a few corners, it settled down. That's kind of all that happens because, you know, you can't really get close. If you get rubbed, you know, the cars are broken. I got to my first DTM race. I remember so clearly. I think I started eighth. I was out the first, third corner. I was out of the race. I couldn't believe it. It was like smack. I had hits from left, right, everywhere. And I was like, oh, God, this is big wake-up call. So just the style of racing is completely different. You know, it's very aggressive racing. But the thing that was most difficult, I have to say, was trying to be consistent. I don't know if it's – I mean, you see it, especially in, I would say, from 2012 to 2000 and, well, until obviously they brought this second generation class one. You know, one guy would be on pole one day and the next day it'd be like 10th, 11th, 12th, could be anywhere. And that was always the frustration with it, is that, you know, you had one good – I remember having, you know, a good weekend and you think, you know, you tried a new setup philosophy, you've done your post-race analysis and you've came up to the conclusion that, all right, we finally, you know, this worked for us. Let's go to the next race now. We learned what worked here. Let's implement that now at the next track, the next venue. You know, it's going to work. And you do that and you're P nowhere again. And you just, you always were going in that cycle of, it was very hard to try and understand how to be basically competitive all the time. And I think that was the case for basically almost everyone in the field, to be honest. And that was a challenge because, you know, you could have one really super strong weekend, be on pole, and then like literally even in the same weekend, the next day, you're just not there anymore. Obviously, it was so competitive. I mean, two temps was like, could be the difference back then between first and, you know, 10th, even more. Which I enjoyed the competitiveness of it, but boy, it was so tough. Honestly, it was really, really tough. Just to kind of understand and understand why, you know, why you're kind of like so up and down. You know, the guys who did well, the Whitman, Rass, you know, they like a few of them really managed to understand that consistency and make that work for them.
Yeah.
But most of the time, you know, it was, you just saw the results. It was all over the show.
Yeah. Tough championship to get consistency in, like you say. Now, Christian, let's pop across to you. You spent many years in a gas guzzling Formula One. And I know you're very active now around sustainability and climate change. And we'll come on to that a little bit later. But when did Formula E first come on your radar? And what were your first impressions?
I mean, The typical motorsport is always very incestuous, so you always know people in the other formula anyway. And a couple of good friends who I'd worked with at Renault went into Formula E right at the beginning. So I was aware of what was going on. I was aware of how much hard work they were having to put in to try and get it off the ground, because obviously getting a new formula off the ground is difficult. But I think I was also very excited that they were doing that. It was obviously very early technology to try and race electric cars. But I think it was quite inspirational for people to see that there was a future for racing electric cars. I mean, now I think it's obvious to a lot of people that electric cars have a big part to play in our future. But at the time, that really wasn't so obvious. So for people to make that step at that time, I think was really brave. So yeah, I was aware of it right from the word go. Which is unusual in Formula One, because Formula One, you tend to be very focused on your own formula and ignore everything around you.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think I was aware straight away they were making big, brave steps.
And did you already have that climate change head on at that stage, or was that something that came later?
I think climate change has been obvious since the 90s. You know, as Tom said, I am quite old. And even in, you know, even with my blinkered Formula One, I only see Formula One. You could see what was happening around you in terms of climate change. It's interesting. In Formula One, we go around the world, we go back to the same country year on year, and we spend a lot of time studying the weather patterns, because obviously they make a big difference to how we run the race in terms of tyre temperatures, tyre usage, engine usage, aerodynamics. And I could see I was going back to the same country year on year over quite a long period of time, and I could see the climate changing year on year. And I could also see, you know, when you come into land in your aeroplane, you look across and you see that pollution haze in the distance. I could see that pollution haze getting bigger and bigger year on year. So I think it was very obvious to me, you know, even in the 90s, what was going on. I was just under the illusion that it was obvious to the politicians and they do something about it.
that was a mistake I made.
And Tom, same question to you, really. When did Formula E show itself on your radar, and did you have any sort of preconceived ideas about it? We've spoken to a lot of drivers about this, and I think there was a bit like with it with any new, very different race series, there's some skepticism in the early days around it. What were your first thoughts when it showed up?
Yeah, so I mean, I remember, when was the first year? 14, 15 it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember, coming up, and I had a good friend, Antonio Felix Acosta. So I just joined BMW at the time, and we were friends before, and he was like the only guy I really knew who was there already. And I remember at the time, you know, even him, I remember him saying like, no one really knew what was going to happen, right? No one knew how it was going to evolve. I think, you know, personally, I'm going to be honest, it wasn't really something that was on my radar. I was like, that's cool. You know, it's a new series. Good drivers seem to be there. But the car, there was nothing, honestly, there was nothing exciting about the cars. And, you know, my mindset, you know, I just finished Formula 3. At that point, I was still obviously hoping to go to Formula 1. You know, I just came into DTM and I was in like my little bubble. And I think it wasn't, you know, as the years kind of evolved, you saw how much, you know, the traction it was getting. And then I would say, as I started to earn my own money from racing, you know, I started to also look, you know, outside of racing in terms of, you know, I'm quite into like investments. And then when I started like doing more and more research more on that side of things, you know, I started to really understand, you know, how pivotal the next coming, you know, couple of years are going to be in terms of, you know, the investment horizon and the way the world's going and where it's going to be and where it needs to be. And Formula E was almost, I mean, you know, the timing of it was perfect. Obviously, they saw that vision. They knew, you know, that was the goal. And honestly, I believe, you know, the timing of it was impeccable. And you got to give your hats off to, obviously, Alejandro and his team and obviously Jean Todt and the FIA for persevering with it. Because, I mean, there was a lot of, even like manufacturers, I remember in the early days thinking, you know, this thing's not going to last. You know, there wasn't, I wouldn't say that, you know, the consensus was out. You know, there was people saying, you know, it's going to be great. But I think at the same time, if anything, it was more that were thought that this thing was going to fail.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was in the same category. I was kind of on the fence. I didn't really know what to expect. All I was thinking was, well, you know, at the time, I didn't, you know, find anything exciting about driving that machinery. Wow, you look where they are now. And I mean, it's just, I think it, you don't even have to, you know, answer any questions on it. You know, you can see that the development over the last few years, the whole team behind Formula E have done an absolutely amazing job. You know, they've got this package, but it's not only the sustainability side of things, driving electric vehicles. Obviously that's, you know, the way of the future, short to medium term. But it's everything, you know, the racing in the cities. You know, just look at even like the social channels, the marketing, everything they're doing is just like, it's so in touch with now in the world and the way it's going. And I think that's the most impressive thing, more than, you know, driving, you know, look, there's a lot of championships now going to start and trying to do electric vehicles. But that's, you know, that's
the
one
Formula
thing.
E was the first.
Formula E was the first. Yeah, and the exclusive single-seater provider of it, which is great. And Christian, how do you, as a team boss, with the way the world has been over the last year or so with coronavirus and a lot of people working from home for many, many months, as a team boss in charge of a race team, how on earth do you go about your job? Has it made your job incredibly challenging to be at home and not in the factory day by day?
Yes. To be absolutely truthful, yes. I mean, I'm used to, you know, I come from a race engineering background and project management, and I'm used to talking to people all day and interacting with people all day and seeing what's going on. It's my normal way of working. So the fact that I can't just wander downstairs and talk to his, whoever in the team makes life difficult. So I do spend quite a lot of time. I think I'm getting repetitive ear injury at the moment. I'm spending so much of my time with headphones on. I'm going to have to get rid of these headphones and get something better. You've just got to spend a lot of time on Zoom talking to people. I guess much like you guys, just use your channels, use all your channels available, telephone, Zoom, WhatsApp, WeChat, you know, Teams, and just use all you can.
Imagine what life would be like if this had happened, God knows, when all we had was a Nokia and a snake on
But also, Harry, one thing I was talking to my wife about this the other day, imagine if this had happened 50 years ago when we wouldn't have found a cure or a vaccine.
No.
I mean, we'd have all been wiped out. What on earth would we have done? It freaks me out thinking about
it. Well, they did. That's what happened with the flu, wasn't it? Yeah. After the First World War, that's what happened with the flu.
Yeah.
That exactly what they went through.
Unbelievable.
It is difficult. It's made more easy by the technology we've got available to us now, for sure. And a lot of our systems, we work remotely anyway, even when we're at the circuit. I mean, Tom, when he comes in at the end of a run, he's got a whole bunch of engineers in the background talking to him on the headphones. But whether those engineers are talking to him in at the circuit or the factory or at their home, it doesn't really make a big difference.
Yeah.
So we are an industry that's used to working in remote locations for sure. We've worked around it.
A quick interruption of the show to remind you to check out our Season 5 podcast sponsors. Motus One, the event transportation company. Motus One is the industry leader in complex transportation management. From hospitality, talent, production crews, VIPs and artist transportation, Motus One's team have you covered. They've also just launched their leading-edge cloud-based event transportation management system, Motus Ride. Now you can manage your entire event transport program digitally, making bookings, allocate rides, create approval processes, see reports, track costs, and loads more. Head over to motusone.com and hear how they can support your event transportation needs.
Moving on to more current affairs, I suppose, and Neo 333. And Tom, I'll just come back to you on this. Now, you've dabbled in Formula E a few times. You had a few shots at it, and you were called up again for season 6 at the end in Berlin. Did you, first question, I suppose, to you, Tom, did you see that as a big shop window for you? And secondly, then to Christian, was that the shop window? Were you looking at Tom there and thinking, okay, I've got an idea?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, I had a dabble, let's say, in the 17-18 season, which at the time was, you know, it was mixed, you know, and I kind of had mixed feelings of it at the time. The environment, you know, just the way it kind of evolved wasn't great. It didn't feel right. Anyway, that story kind of came to a quick end. And to be honest, like personally myself as well, I just left kind of like a bad taste in my mouth in terms of, you know, being there and where, you know, I kind of was like, well, I was almost put off if I wanted to try and give it a, you know, get back in the scene, to be honest. And then, you know, had a few years like in a year in the States and kind of in the GT scene. And the opportunity with Jaguar was really like chance or just random. I mean, one of my best friends actually, Mitch Evans, you know, we grew up together in New Zealand. We've basically, you know, being close mates since we're about 8 years old or something, 7 years old. He was kind of talking to me about almost helping them on more on a like a on the simulator side of things and kind of back at base. Like in a sort of development role, you know, because I still had my, you know, GT things on and I mean, I think, you know, they were looking around for someone to help, you know, on the development side of things on the sim and helping them with some track side stuff, you know, back at base sort of stuff. And then, you know, James had this clash with the WEC at the last round of Berlin, and it literally moved super fast. It was, you know, at first it was just kind of like come in and see how you do on the sim, and we'll check you out for maybe some work, you know, down the line. And then all of a sudden it was like, we might need you to do the race. And it was like, wow, okay. And honestly, at first I was like, I don't know, you know, is it a good idea? You know, I've had no preparation. I haven't driven. I tested the Gen 2 car like once or twice with BMW back in 2018 before, you know, the middle of 2018. So I hadn't driven the car for like 2 years. Hadn't done much at all with like being involved really with FE for 2 years. So I was kind of like, oh, you know, it could go really wrong. Like I could just jump in here and just be nowhere, because I know firsthand how tough the championship is, how competitive it is. And not only that, it wasn't like jumping into a new weekend where everyone's kind of coming in fresh. You know, they'd been there the whole week.
Yeah. It was an intense finale, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And they'd been there the whole week racing. And you know, I was coming in for the last two races. They'd already done four races. And I was thinking, oh, I could look really stupid here. But then I was like, you know what? I have absolutely nothing to lose. Not one thing. You know, if I did crap, that was just, well, you know, I didn't have no practice, had nothing. You know, the expectations were very low. And I was kind of like, you know what? I've got nothing to lose. Let's do it. And so I did some work with the team on the sim leading up to the event. Tried to, you know, prepare as much as I possibly could with the, let's say, tools I had at the time. And then, yeah, jumped in for the last two races. Yeah, it was definitely was very hard, especially like not having raced the car for so long, and everything's evolved a lot. But I mean, I was fortunate to, you know, jump into a team that had, you know, obviously won races and let's say, you know, the car was obviously competitive. I was in group four, that helped. You know, let's say I'd made my life a little bit easier. But still, I was a bit nervous definitely before jumping in, to wondering how I kind of went.
But it went pretty well, and it obviously went well enough to catch the eye of Mr. Silk. So Christian, what was it about Tom that made you think that's the guy we need in our team? Had you been tracking him for some time, and was that the icing on the cake in Berlin? How did it all come about?
You mean other than the massive bribe?
Yeah, $5.
Yeah. Are you one of Tom's investments?
Exactly. You know all that money he's investing at the moment.
Yeah, well, investing in Neo, you know what?
Yeah, if you invested in Neo, you did well as well. You've done really well.
Yeah.
I mean, we were a lucky position to be in, because going into season seven, we were almost a little bit spoilt for choice in terms of drivers. You know, there was plenty of really quick guys out there. You know, sometimes when you get to change drivers at the end of the season, you're looking out going, oh, you know, I'm going to struggle to find a good driver. And despite the fact that season six had obviously been very hard work for the team and we hadn't been able to show our performance, we were lucky enough to have lots of good drivers, you know, who were happy to talk to us and we could work with. So that was a very positive starting point from us as a team. Obviously, Tom's performance in Berlin did him lots of favours, you know, really did him lots of favours. As I said before, you know, the engineering staff in motor racing talk to each other a lot.
Yeah.
And we'd spoken with people who worked with Tom recently and also engineers who worked with Tom in the past. And they all had lots of really good things to say about him, both in terms of his speed, but also his intelligence and maturity in the car. And rest assured, these are not easy cars to drive. You know, I guess Tom would echo this, both in terms of the qualifying format where you've got to go out and with, you know, you can't do multiple laps to try and get that lap time. You've got to go out on a street circuit, which is going to be difficult, on a circuit that's changing condition because it's going to get dusty, and nail a lap on a grid that's really, really close. So you've got to nail a lap that's right on limit. You can't keep anything in your pocket. So the qualifying format's difficult, and then the race format's also difficult because you've just got to be so super consistent in the race, driving in quite a different style for qualifying. So it's not an easy formula to drive in, and all our feedback and the results we got with Tom was very good, very mature, very intelligent, and very quick. You know, if you go through Wiki and have a look at his background, it's obviously very strong. He's got some really good standout results round street circuits, which are the most relevant to us because all our racing is around street circuit.
Yeah.
So he really did stand out. we, you know, I hadn't met Tom before. I didn't know him before. Some of the other engineers had worked with him before, but obviously as soon as you meet Tom, you know, he's a reasonably nice guy.
We'll he's all right, isn't he? Yeah.
He's all right. Yeah, he's all right. He hasn't bought me a beer yet, or a rum actually, which he's still owe me, mate. I just want to find that out.
These bloody Kiwi, like Swedish, British hybrids.
Are we bribing Christian with rum now? Cases of rum arriving at his doorstep.
It's literally on record now, so you can't
dark
get
rum,
out of it.
Dark rum, don't forget. But no, I mean, just joking aside, you know, we started working with Tom, and we have, you know, we try and do our due diligence. You know, we work with the guys, and obviously there's an element of how they're going to fit in with the team. Yeah. It's up to us as a team to make the driver feel comfortable. You know, I don't know what it is, but a driver really has to feel comfortable within the team to produce his best, and we see that time and time again. And it just looked like Tom would be a really good fit within the team. Oliver and Tom obviously get on really well together, which is important. Yeah. Again, in this championship, it's really important the drivers are sharing information, because our sessions are quite short. We don't have much time to learn, so we really have to use both cars to work in parallel together to learn as much information. And it was obvious that Tom and Oliver would work well together, which was obviously important for us. And he had previous experience of FE, game really super important. So he just ticked so many boxes. And then as soon as we started testing with Tom, he did a super good job, settled down straight away. So it was an easy decision for us to make in the long term.
Well, that's enough of making Tom feel warm and fuzzy and giving him a big head. And now
you haven't done a race yet.
Yeah, now you've got to perform. We come to a point in proceedings where it gets serious. And you are an advantage here because there's two of you. Everyone else has had to do this on their own. However, I will hand over to my lofty colleague to explain to you the next stage of the show. Yeah.
Tom, Christian, welcome to Motor Mouths, the hardest quiz in motorsport. Everybody who comes on the podcast takes part. But you should have an advantage because there are two of you. And also all the questions, as they are for every person we have on, are normally to do with them and their careers. And this week, I've made them all Neo-specific. Okay. So if you get these wrong, then, well, I think the bosses won't be too happy. And you can work together.
You may confer, but no Googling.
And actually, you're direct rivals for this. So there are 14 points in total up for grabs. And it's actually Alexander Sims and Dilbag Gill who top the leaderboard.
Oh, I'm not surprised there.
Yeah, so you've really got it. That's the mark to beat, really. And right at the bottom is, as everyone always shocked to hear, Karun Chandhok in 42nd position in last. So with 3.5 points. So the aim is for 3.5, and then anything above that is good.
Sounds good.
Okay. So currently the team is called Neo 333 Racing. But can you tell me all of the previous incarnations of the team?
That's a nice starting point.
Nick DV Neo.
Yeah. Correct. That is one.
Yeah. Team China was the first one, obviously.
China Racing.
That's two.
We've been next EV.
What else, Christian?
I should have put the wiki page up straight away.
Yes, I think.
Neo 333. That's apart from that one.
Yeah.
Apart from the current name, I'm looking for four others. You've got two of them at the moment.
We've got two.
So you've got China Racing and Next EV Neo. There are two more that I have on my list.
I thought I heard Christian say one of them.
No, it wasn't quite right.
Were we not Next TV for a while?
I don't think you were Next TV on its own. I think there is another Next TV, but I think there was a sort of...
Which one did we say?
Neo formally team.
Yes, correct. That's three. So I'm looking for one more. You're halfway there. It's Next TV, but there's three letters.
Next TV.
Oh, come on.
You can see the cogs turning.
It's either 333 or Neo.
Oh, this is frustrating. Okay, I'm going to...
Next TV...
Is that you'd better not be Googling it.
He's so Googling it.
I'm not Googling it, I'm cozying it.
Okay,
I could Google
right.
It. I don't,
that is your time. Your time is up on that question, I'm afraid. So you got China Racing,
yeah.
You got Next EV Neo, you got Neo Formula E Team, and for
for a full house, I was looking for NextEV TCR.
Oh, yes.
Oh, he knew it. He's kicking himself.
Yes, that was
before I started that one.
Yeah, that's the one. But you've got two.
That one doesn't even make sense.
I'm giving you two out of three.
I don't think any of them massively make sense, actually.
You're lucky we didn't put up all the different liveries you've had and make you guess which season they're in. Right, okay. Tim's got the next one for you. It's a solid start, though.
That's a good start. This one I think you may get. I think Tom will probably get this one. So at the time of recording, and we are in January 2021, how old is Oliver Turvey?
Oh, my God. Oliver Turvey.
This surprised me.
I actually don't know his birthday.
I mean, I should know his birthday because we're giving him birthday cards before now, so I should know his birthday.
His birthday is the 1st of April, if that helps.
Yeah.
Do you reckon he's got to be like a 1989?
How old are you, Tom?
I'm born 93.
You're
93? Just turned 27.
Okay, wow. Well, he's older than you, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, I know that.
He's older than Tom and younger than Christian.
Thank you for that, Harry. That's really, really helpful, mate.
Very welcome.
I have early 30s in my head, but...
Oh, yeah.
I think he's 34 or something, but that's it.
Is that final answer?
No.
Younger than that. 30...
Going to have to hurry you.
33.
Yay, there you go.
Correct. That is absolutely correct.
Well
he
done,
is
Tom.
33 years old. Well, nearly 34, I suppose. But yeah, 33. Well done. That's another 3 points in the bag.
So we can retire now. We're not last.
Yeah, You're not last. It's fine. But I mean, you do want to beat the Mahindra guys, I think. So we're going
we
for
want
four.
To beat them on track. That's the way
yeah,
we want
that's
to beat
true.
Them.
Okay, question number three. It's going to be another tricky one if the first one is to go by anything. Can you...
This is tough.
Can you name every driver who has raced for the Neo team since it entered the sport in season one as China Racing?
Every driver.
Every driver that has ever raced. That I'm looking for
nine
drivers.
Okay,
if you get six of them, actually, was that a bit harsh? If you get
five of them. Five is fair.
If you get five of them, you can have the full points.
Five. Tom Dillman,
correct.
Oliver Turvey.
Correct.
Oliver Turvey, correct.
Ma.
That is correct.
Luca Felipe,
correct. Oh.
One more.
Nelson.
Yeah.
Correct. Nelson Piquet Jr.
That's your five.
That's your five. That's your five. So you've got the full points, but I'm tempted to give you an extra point if you can get one more to make up for losing a point for the first question.
Daniel App.
Correct.
Yes, well done.
Oh, you've got the 3 points in the bag. Can you name them all?
Who drove at the beginning?
Yeah, there was something. Right. I was reading about
Hope and Tongue. Hope and Dung.
Correct.
Yes.
Hope and Tongue. So you need if you want all of them. I need one, two.
You're missing two
drivers.
Two.
These will be really tough to get because they weren't full time, and one of them's definitely faded into the background since.
Oh mate, no idea. They had some random. Was it one of the first year? Was it that like? There was loads of different drivers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I just gave a massive clue. I just dropped a massive clue.
I've got it up on my screen at the moment because I prepared for this, obviously, so I Googled it because I thought you might answer. I'm not doing it.
You know exactly. So it's down to Tom.
You do to us, so I thought, they'll ask me questions. I'll prepare. I'll look like I know what I'm talking about.
Tom, any clues, last minute?
I don't know without...
Okay. Well, you've got the full points anyway. So, and actually an extra point for going the further miles. I'm going to give you 4 points for that. You were missing Antonio Garcia and Charles Peak.
Charles Peak.
Oh, yeah. I remember him doing some.
Yeah. He scored points for one of them, Peak, and then Garcia. Yeah. So that was the first. I think Peak was the second season and Garcia was the first season.
Moving on. Question number four. Then I think you'll get this. It's a bit easier. Where was the first ever Formula E race held?
China.
Correct.
Can you tell me exactly where?
Beijing.
Yeah.
Correct.
I'll take a pretty good guess at that.
I was going to go Hong Kong, actually. Well done.
Oh, I thought you had the answers up, Christian.
No, I've closed it now because I'm just too honest.
This is the grassy loves posting that he won. I think he won the first ever one, did he?
Loves posting.
The first one was the big crash, wasn't it, between Heidfeld and Prost, and then I think
Nelson was in the lead, but they did it.
Oh, was that the first race?
Stop wrong.
Yeah, that was the first way. With the big Prost, one of them cut across the other and he flipped over. Yeah, well, that put Formula E on the map, didn't it? Okay, for a bonus point,
this is your last one.
How many podiums has the team achieved in total since season one?
Ooh, the first year was quite a lot, no?
Yeah, it was quite a lot in the first year. Since then, it's been one, but first year, quite a lot.
No, I have no idea.
There'll be more on the way.
Right?
And they got
season four.
He won two, because I've just read that.
I think we should dock him points.
Outrageous.
No, but I'm being honest about it. I've closed the window.
I'm cheating, but I'm being honest.
I only read that he won two. I don't know how many did. I go five, maybe, mate.
Tom, are you saying five as well?
What do you think, or more?
In total?
Yeah.
No, I'm going to go with, five's a good punt.
Six. So close.
Six.
Harry. I don't know. I mean,
did you say six, Tom? I'm sure you said six.
I think there was a bit of lag on the Zoom.
He was putting his head down, so I went to six.
You are correct. It is six.
Is that a full house?
I feel like you should only get half a bonus point for that.
You gave it away. So
I did give it away. So I'm going to give you half a point because I wanted you to get as close to the Mahindra guys as possible. So that is all your questions. Let me just do the maths because you have done rather well.
I think this is going to be at least top three, isn't it? It's got to be.
Okay, so there were 14 points up for grabs. Alexander Sims, Dilbag Gill, Connor Daly, Brendan Hartley are all at the top with 14, 13. And I can tell you that Christian and Tom from Neo 333, you have scored 12 and a half points, which I'm afraid doesn't quite match Mahindra, but it does put you ahead of Brendan Hartley into the top five. So that is a very, very respectable score nonetheless.
Well done. Strong effort. Well done, you two.
Something to build on or something like that. A typical team principle term, isn't it?
A promising start, room for improvement.
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, that was good stuff. Well done, boys. Now, listen, I'm curious to get your take on this one, Christian. Formula E has come on leaps and bounds. Its Gen 2 cars are amazing. It's had some incredible tracks. It's had some great manufacturers. There has been one or two manufacturers leave the sport or leaving the sport. What does the future long-term look like for Formula E? And do you think F1... bearing in mind you have this exclusivity in electric single seaters, do you think F1 will fade?
I mean, long term, the future is very exciting. I think the good thing about Formula E is that the ecosystem works well as a group. You know, the FIA and FEO and the teams and the manufacturers talk to each other regularly and listen to each other and act not with their own interests at heart, but also what the championship's interests at heart. And I think that's where we've been so strong. You know, I came from an industry where everyone was always very focused on their own industry, on their own interests, to the exclusion of everyone else's interests. In Formula E, we're much more, how can we look after each other? How can we build the sport together? Because as the sport grows stronger, we all grow stronger. And I think everyone realizes that. So I think that makes it, you know, that makes me very excited about our future. You know, we've had a lot of discussions, obviously, with what's happened with COVID and lockdowns and races. Been a lot of discussion, and it's been very mature discussion that's looked for the betterment of the good. You know, we've been working together, you know, in terms of making it more sustainable, not only financially but also, you know, globally as well. So that makes me very excited about the future. I think the Gen 3 cars, when they get released, will be very exciting. Yeah. I think the drivers are going to love them. I think the fans are going to love them. And it's when electric racing was discussed, I think, in the early 2000s, we were talking about it in Formula One. It's where I imagined it would go. I think that's a really exciting future. You know, they're going to be proper cars. So that makes me very excited about the future for sure. What was your last question?
Well, bearing in mind the exclusivity that Formula E has over single-seater racing and then it's in electric form, is there a future for Formula One? Does it eventually become obsolete, or do you think it will continue to be the pinnacle of racing?
I don't understand. You know, I have friends in Formula One. I talk to the people in Formula One. I don't really understand why the major car manufacturers are going to continue pushing a formula based on on old-fashioned technology when they're not selling any road cars the old technology. You know, surely the point of motor racing is to advance the latest technology being electric cars. So why would the major motor manufacturers want to push a technology that they're not even selling in the showrooms? You know, the old saying about, you know, race on Sunday and sell on Monday. That's still true to an extent. So if you're not actually racing the cars that the people can buy in terms of technology, I think Formula One has got an issue there. I know they're pushing very hard on their synthetic fuels and seeing that as a way forward. I'm not sure. I would be worried about that if I was in Formula One at the moment, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That doesn't really make sense. But then again, you have Aston Martin coming in, don't you? It just doesn't seem to add up. But coming back to Formula E and again, looking to the future, to both of you, just a couple more questions before we let you go. Looking at NIO and the future of NIO, you know, there's been a restructure over the last couple of years. We had Oliver Turvey scored some great results in the early days of NIO. What's the plan for the future? What are your aspirations for not just this coming season, but the long term for NIO?
World domination.
Perfect. Brilliant. Love that. Just take over the world. Just destroy the world and take it over.
I just want to finish first and second in every race. That'll be absolutely fine for me.
Yeah.
If Tom and Oliver can flip a coin before the race and decide which one of them finishes in first, which one of them finishes in second.
Yeah.
But I'll deal with that issue. That'll be a nice problem to have. No, we want to keep moving forward. I mean, it's interesting that we had a really good Valencia test at the end of last year. It was a really strong test. Obviously, we're disappointed that we can't go racing in Santiago this month. But it's a bit like, you know, a Christmas present that's under the tree and I'm not allowed to open it for a little bit longer, because I think, you know, Tom, we're super excited, aren't we, to see how the car performs out of the first race. You know, we think we've taken a good step forward and we're super excited to see where that is. And obviously, we're super excited to see how Tom gets in. I mean, we've got to make a team that works around him, and we're super excited to start doing that.
And Tom, what are your expectations for the coming season?
Well, also, you know, personally from my side, you know, after doing the testing, and obviously, you know, I'd followed the championship. You know, I've got friends in the championship. I followed the championship, although I wasn't part of it for the last few years anyway. You know, I almost watch every race that I can. And, you know, it was clear that obviously NIO was struggling. So, you know, I did first couple of tests with them. You know, it was quite fortunate actually for me. Obviously, I did some stuff with BMW with the season 5 car a few years ago now, but also just recently with Jaguar. And I think that was really important for me to get that experience and just to see also how much has evolved since in those 2 years. But also, you know, obviously, you know, Evans was fighting for the championship up until the last, you know, sort of the Berlin thing. And I think that was really useful for me to see, and then, you know, come across to NIO and kind of see where the biggest differences were, you know. And I think there was definitely quite some areas that stood out almost like straight away. You know, last year, in the previous years, you know, the powertrain side of thing was obviously, Christian knows more, from what I understand, wasn't that efficient. And we've made a great step there for the coming season. Obviously, you know, Valencia, you sort of, you know, everything was very close. You know, it looks like we've made a massive step. And now it's kind of all about, you know, now that we know that we've got an efficient, let's say, powertrain package, now it's all the small details that we need to work on, and you know, take a little, you know, a percent here, a percent there, because we're being so close. You know, those little small things that add up, you know, are going to be super important now, and that's kind of like where we're really focusing, trying to maximize, you know, what we've got, and you know, the people we have, and trying to you know, improve on all these little small areas that we believe we can move forward on. And I think that's kind of the goal at the moment, because we know we've taken a step on the powertrain, and now it's just about getting the most out of that powertrain side of things, and you know, everyone in the team, get, you know, working as hard as possible and trying to, do their best, you know. And I'm really motivated. I mean, it's a nice thing to be a part of, to kind of, you know, obviously I'm going to give my best, and whether that's, you know, trying to provide, you know, some good feedback, at the same time, obviously, also, you know, constructive criticism, let's say, and trying to, you know, to bring everything in the direction, or, you know, get the results that obviously everyone in the team wants and thoroughly deserves. So I'm really motivated and excited for the season. It's a shame it's being pushed back a little bit. It's kind of, you know, it would have been nice to get the ball rolling next weekend. But anyway, that's out of control, our control.
Yeah.
In terms of expectations, I mean, I think we've got to be realistic. The grid is so tight now, so competitive. And we're still, you know, trying to evolve, let's say. And I think we've definitely got a lot more of competitive package. And now we just need to try and get the most out of it, and then slowly bring that. You know, we want to see a rate of development. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the biggest important thing is to, you know, if we get to the first race and we'll find out where we are, and then we just need to try and keep improving. And I just want to do my best that I can. I mean, that's all I really can do. And hopefully that, you know, results in getting some good results for the team. And hopefully, you know, myself and Ollie can give it our all and Yeah,
excellent. No, that's great. Now, before we let you go, we have three final quickfire questions which we ask all of our guests. And because there's two of you this time, I'll put the first one to you, Christian, and then second one to you, Tom, and then both of you for the final question. So I'll kick off, Harry, if that's all right. So, Christian, what's got you excited at the moment?
I think the prospects of the first race.
Yep.
Yeah, we want to see where we are.
Very excited for that first Formula E race. Tom, how much of your success is down to luck and right time, right place, and how much is down to pure hard work?
I would say that's probably 50-50 in my case, because, and I'll explain why, because when I was young, you know, like I said, I had a younger brother. He didn't, unfortunately, get the chance. I don't think that was just because I was the oldest. I think that was, you know, I was kind of the one who was working on my in the garage late on my go-karts with my dad. You know, I was always super determined from a very young age, and it's kind of been my everything I do. I feel like I'm, you know, I take it, well, I try and do it as best as possible. I'm not, you know, if I do something, I do it like full gas or zero, you know. But then, you know, I had some tough years. My career started really well. 2010, you know, I just started my first year in England, and I won the Renault Championship. And I was like, you know, I was still super young, naive. I was like, this is going to be easy. And then, you know, the funding stumbling block, you know, hit hard in a tough couple of years. And then literally out of chance, I went to a surprise birthday party in Indonesia on the other side of the world, and basically got friendly with the Galao family, yep. Sean Galao.
Yeah.
And literally, you know, I was basically, I don't really know what I was going to do for 2014. And literally after a few days of spending time with him, his dad was basically like, you know, we want you to come a part of our team, and we'll take you to Carlin basically and pay for your season.
Wow.
In 2014. And that was literally out of getting an invite to this party. I'd really never met the kid before. It was just like a random, you know, kind of inviting as many drivers as he could. And basically out of that, I got my season where I could finally show myself in a competitive car. And yeah, one thing. And then after that, I became a professional driver. So,
wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
If there's anything to learn from that, it's always go to a surprise birthday party.
Never turn down a party.
Wow. What a story. Yeah. Final question to both of you. Tom, let's come to you first. What are you scared of?
What am I scared of? I think everyone's scared of failure. I mean, failure and then snakes. I hate snakes.
Nice combo.
Christian?
You know the answer. I'm going to give the answer to that. I'm just going to say the climate crisis, aren't I?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
and snakes.
And snakes, yeah.
I mean, the climate crisis, we've run out of...
Some big philosopher...
There is much more we want to discuss. We're going to have to talk to you guys more another time, because Christian is hugely involved in climate change, not just within the Formula E ecosystem, but well beyond that. So it's an area we want to talk to you more about, Christian. Unfortunately, today we've just run out of time. We've gassed on for far too long. But listen, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you both on the show. I think the format of having two people on works really nicely, and having team boss and a new driver is a great combination. Tom, we wish you all the best for season 7 when it eventually does get going, and Christian, equally, all the best for the upcoming season and seasons to come, and hopefully we'll see you trackside soon.
Cheers guys.
Thanks a lot.
Before you hop off, one final reminder to check out the guys and girls at Motus One, your new transportation solution for minor, mega and signature events anywhere in the world. Motus One simplifies the complex process of event transportation and provides clients with unrivaled service and support to ensure your event's transportation needs are fulfilled. Check them out today at motusone.com, and if you tell them you found them through the Motormouth podcast, you'll get up to 20% off your first booking. Now, doesn't that sound good? Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.